Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm very well, thanks Coach Steve. I can see you, for real.
I know, right? So let's talk about the elephant in the room. So yes, we are launching this podcast a little bit late. Normally we do our recordings on a Monday, but Monday was Easter Monday.
It was.
So now we're recording it on a Tuesday morning, Tuesday the 19th of April, mm-hmm. which if you're listening to this on Tuesday the 19th of April, hello from the past.
Yes.
But yes, because of that, I can see eyeball to eyeball with Coach Nick in front of me.
Yep.
And Nick, let's talk about it. How was your Easter?
It was really good, thanks. Just nice and chilled. Did some training. How about you?
It was good. I need to ask, did the Easter Bunny come and visit you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
The Easter Bunnies live in my house every day.
That's what I was going to say. I'm sure you have bunnies in your
house.
My bun
buns.
Yeah.
But we got lots of chocolates for everybody that lives in my house. Chocolates were there.
Yep. Did you have a chocolate?
Yeah. I absolutely had a chocolate.
Yeah.
I had, do you want to know?
Tell me. What did you have?
Look, I had two mini cream eggs and a few bites of a giant egg. And that was when I was cleaning my daughter Lucia's room and I found them. And I'm like, I think I'll just steal them. But I also have a lint bunny for when I want that bunny as well. So, yeah, you know how it is.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
I think that's the best way to approach it, right?
Like, yeah.
These things like Easter are going to come into our lives. Yep. You know, we've got things like Christmas, which are the other side of the year and other festivities.
Mm.
And it's okay to have something that, you might deem as, quote, bad food or whatever language you want to call it. You can enjoy these things. And it's a matter of acknowledging that you do enjoy it, because I think you can get stuck in like a little loop where you don't know that you're consuming it, right? Like how many of us have experienced that? Sitting on the couch watching a movie and you inhale a whole bag of, popcorn or, a whole tub of ice cream or, you don't even know that you've had a whole bag of chips. That's when it becomes a little bit problematic that you don't know that you've consumed it. You've kind of lost that conscious awareness of it. But if you go through Easter and enjoy a piece of chocolate, it's fine. It's not the end of the world. It's about getting back onto it and keep continuing the process.
Correct. And also, I did read somewhere, which I love this thing of, if you are craving that bit of chocolate, but then you say, I'm not going to have the chocolate, and then you have, stacks of veggies, stacks of chicken, other things to try and fill that chocolate void, then you end up ultimately having that chocolate as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have just had the chocolate and not all the extra stuff to try and compensate for the chocolate.
Yeah.
In the end, just have it and move on.
That's right. Yeah. And you might find that the process of restricting foods in your diet, using an example of chocolate, because we all have our kryptonite, we know that for me, it's hummus or anything in paste form, right? Like yogurt, same thing. So if I was to heavily restrict those foods in my diet, you bet that I'm thinking about it all the time. And then as soon as I get the smallest taste, I go through a process of disinhibition, because I've inhibited my senses for a long time for that. And because I enjoy that food, I've been thinking about it so much, I go through a process of disinhibition. And before I know it, I could consume a whole kilo tub of hummus, those big ones, right? And it's the same as like our approach to chocolate. If you enjoy chocolate, which is okay to enjoy chocolate, but you've avoided that for a really long time, as soon as you have one little bite, that you've opened the Pandora's box, right? And it doesn't stop there. Next thing you know, you've had the whole bunny and the second bunny and the whole bowl of little eggs that you brought out for the family, and then you're going through the kids' Easter egg hunt and all the things. And then you realize, like, oh geez, I've eaten 2,000 calories worth of chocolate, and it's only 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, what's happened, right? So that's when you face problems.
Hi Shane, if you're listening. He made me throw him up about three different bunnies while he was playing video games. It's like, oh, I'll have another bunny, thanks,
at
9 a.m.
Oh, gosh. Well, look, I think if you have enjoyed Easter, let it be through chocolate or other family events. You know, often it is a time when families come together and we may have that cultural family experience where we are, you know, having a lot of highly dense caloric meals. That's okay. You know, it's a time just to move on with our training and our approach to nutrition, getting back into the strategy that we want to employ, and, you know, maybe reap the benefits of those higher caloric days, because we know that after a day or two of higher calories, you know, in competition prep, some people might call it refeed, some might call it diet breaks, others might call it cheat meals, whatever language you want to use, it's a similar concept. You know, increasing our calories for one particular day, you may find that your training increases, your performance increases, and then your overall needs. You might find that you're doing more steps, doing more housework and such. So then it almost kind of balances out. The problem is when we kind of think that everything's derailed and we've, quote, fallen off the wagon, whatever that means, and, you know, we kind of give up, and that's where we face problems. So whatever happened over Easter, great, you know, use it as a positive thing and move on to our next goal, the next target.
That's right, because connections and relationships around food and rituals, they're actually part of life as well, as well as training, as well as getting lean, as well as having abs, all of those things. But yeah, you need to have a rounded balance.
Yeah, I think it is all about the journey, right?
Yeah.
And if you can find ways to introduce those cultural habits, those behaviors that you enjoy doing with your family, your friends, you know, the people that you love, that's when it becomes a lifelong thing. And it's not something that is just for 12 weeks or something that is just to get the six pack or, you know, just to lose those 5 kilos, whatever your goal is. It's about the journey of longevity, where we go, hey, you know, I can enjoy a piece of chocolate, or I can enjoy a burger on the weekends, or I could enjoy a glass of wine because it's my birthday, or whatever you choose to do. You know, you can enjoy those things, but then still make it work within your goals, right?
That's right. And I'm not a fan of people demonizing any particular approach like that. I don't like it when I see people going, no, you can't. I don't like that sort of restriction, because ultimately that's going to lead to, you know, a bit of binging and things like that, that binge restriction cycle. And I'm not a fan. I like long-term sustainability.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But look, Nick, moving, looking to the future.
Yep.
We've got an exciting time this week. We have reached the final week of the challenge, week 12.
Yeah.
And we've got some important dates coming up.
Wow.
So firstly, we have the kind of photo time where, you know, you can take your photo now. You know, you can access the completion document if you'd like to on the challenge website. But you'll have from Monday to Tuesday next week, so that's the 25th to 26th of April, also falls on Anzac Day, so public holiday, no excuses. You've got time to upload your photos on that Monday or the Tuesday, to, yes, upload your final photos to the challenge website in your profile. So that's not on your journal, so it's part of your profile. That's not just posting it on social media. If you want to be part of the competition, you just have to add it to your profile. And that's Monday, Tuesday. Closes at Tuesday midnight. And Nick, every single challenge, we have people messaging us at 11:30 p.m. on a Tuesday, or messaging us at 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, saying, "Oh, I've missed the deadline." Mm-hmm. So don't make that this challenge. So if you want to be competitive for the January challenge, make sure that you complete that process by midnight on Tuesday midnight on the 26th of April. So that because public voting opens the very next day. Where on Wednesday, the 27th of April, you'll be able to log in and vote for your favorite Max and Maxine challenger. How exciting, Nick.
Yeah. So treat it like you're getting on a plane, on a flight. You would not get to your flight exactly when it leaves.
No.
Get there a few hours early.
Yeah.
If you're me, you're probably there 5 or 6 hours early. So I am weird. But yeah, just have a think, have it in mind, and be a winner and get it in.
Now, public voting, yes, opens on Wednesday, the 27th of April. That'll be from 9 a.m.
Yep.
And you have up until Sunday, the 1st of May, so, you know, a few days, about 5 days or so, Sunday midnight to cast your votes. So, guys, you can log into the Max's website and then also into the Maxine's website for public voting. And girls, you can log into the Maxine website and the Max's website. You'll have 3 votes for both categories, for both Max's and Maxine's. You can, of course, vote for yourself and then, you know, your 2 other favorite challenges, or you can vote for your 3 favorite transformations. Okay. Now, you can invite your friends and family to vote as well. You'll be able to just send those family members or friends or whoever to the challenge website. They would just need to click the button that says vote. They'll then need to create a voting account so we can verify that they're a human. Yes, we have had those challenges in the past. And once they verify their email that they are a human, they can log into both the Max and the Maxine challenge websites as a voter and vote for their favorite transformations as well.
How exciting.
So good. And then once the public voting closes on May the 1st, the first announcement of awards comes to our top 50 that gets released on May the 4th, Star Wars Day. May
Say
the 4th.
It, yes.
So May the 4th is when we will be announcing our top 50. That'll be from 2 p.m. Then we've got our awesome awards night, Nick, where we're going to sort out our drum roll this time. And that will be on the Friday, May the 6th, and that will be kicking off at 7:30 p.m. Melbourne time. And that's going to be live streamed to our Facebook social hub where we'll be announcing the top 10, top 3, People's Choice Award and the Community Award. It's going to be a fun night, the awards night, like always.
Yeah, can't wait. Oh, nearly there.
Now, many of us have been contacting the challenge team about what to do in between challenges. And the first thing I would say is, you know, the challenge, we like to think of it as, you know, a journey. Yes, sure, it is a 12-week program, but we hope that you have learned and developed skills that you can take with you beyond the challenge and continue your fitness journey beyond these 12 weeks. So we hope that once the challenge is over, that it isn't over for you and that you keep fitness and, you know, good relationships with food as part of your, you know, daily routines and things that you just do as part of who you are. Now, we do have some guides and content for you once the challenge is over. So on the nutrition template, we hope that you found the recovery diet, which will be a 3-week phased diet, bringing you back to maintenance calories. Maintenance calories meaning that your body weight doesn't fluctuate anymore, it just stays stable. And then on the training template, we hope that you found one of the hidden sheets, which is the deload sheet, which can be found on all three of our programs, week 1 to 4, 5 to 8, and 9 to 12. You just need to click in the bottom left-hand corner. There's four lines that are stacked on each other. Click that one, it will open up like a contents menu, and you'll find the deload program, which is designed to help you continue training just at a lower volume level so that you can recover adequately after 12 weeks of training.
Excellent. Excellent. I hope everybody finds that. I'm just looking at it now. Looks good. Very exciting.
Now, Nick, we've got the M Challenge coming soon.
Yes.
So the Max and Maxine Challenge, the name of it will cease to exist, and we are merging both Max and Maxine to call it the M Challenge. And we've had a busy week, past couple of weeks, haven't we, Nick?
Yeah, we've been hanging out heaps and being very very active with our filming.
Yeah, so you are likely going to see lots more of Coach Nick and myself on places like Instagram, Facebook, social medias, because we've been creating a few different bits and pieces, which you'll probably see, which will be really cool. I'll just leave it at that. But if you see our face, let us know if wherever you find it, let it be social media, let it be Instagram or Facebook or wherever it is, and it'll be good. And hopefully you see my face. With a face full of makeup, Nick.
It's not meant to. You're not meant to see the makeup. It's makeupless makeup. If we can see it too much, then it's not.
It's cool. Not. Yeah.
You looked good on the day. So
I looked good.
Yeah.
Good.
Flawless.
Flawless. Mm-hmm. Flawless. Yes, I had something in my eyebrows and my beard, and that's what.
Oh, did you have your eyebrows?
I don't know what it was, but it was something. Anyway,
right. Maybe
you'll
they
find
just
out.
Brushed them.
Maybe. Yeah. They're pretty wild these days. Okay. Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week, where we celebrate those victories that might not be linked to the scales. So, Nick, tell us, who have you found?
All right. So, the first one is Shannon Anderson. Come on down. So, Shannon Anderson says, the scale may not be my friend lately, but I wore shorts for the first time in a long time and was happy to see muscles for Flex Friday. So, I know that a lot of women, that's one of their things that they get a bit scared of, wearing shorts. And, when you start to see some leg definition, you know you're coming into yourself and doing a really good job. So, and when Shannon says the scale may not be her friend, she means that it may not reflect the number that she wants to see, but it doesn't even mean that it's not necessarily her real friend, because it might be her friend, because it might be showing some data that is actually reflecting that she's gaining some muscle and doing really well. So well done, Shannon.
That's awesome, Shannon. And all I'd say is that it's legcellent
oh.
that you're able to wear shorts again. I love that.
Thank goodness you're here for those dad jokes. Legcellente. All right. Carmen Woudenberg, she's our next one. Hello, Carmen. So, Carmen, comparing pics of my back gains this round. If you are done with your weight loss journey and thinking what's next, jump into the Get Strong program on maintenance calories. I've really enjoyed the increase in my strength from the higher calories that allowed me to push myself harder in my training. So Carmen's had a go at going from a deficit to maintenance, and that is excellent because she's recomping. So she's probably having a chance to increase her strength, gaining a little bit of muscle, but not going too over the top and just seeing what's happening. So her body's probably really enjoyed that. Well done, Carmen.
Yeah, that's awesome, Carmen. Congratulations. And maintenance calories is a nice way to, you know, very slowly gain muscle over time. Mm-hmm. Like, you won't be able to maximize or really get that optimal muscle growth, but, you know, you can gain very small amounts of muscle over a period of time. So someone like Carmen, who's committed her fitness journey to a long time frame, not just 12 weeks, you know, probably like 12 months, 12 mm-hmm. years and beyond, and enjoying those maintenance calories and seeing those changes long term. So I love that, Carmen.
Yep. Awesome. Well done. And Chantal Adams, final one from me. I decided that today I'm eating chocolate because it's Easter, but I need to share my victory with you. I love Easter chocolate, and it's nothing for me to eat a bunny, a bun bun, or three on Easter Sunday. Earlier today, I ate some Easter egg, but I weighed out 40 grams. I put it in a bowl of fruit and allowed for it in my plan. I didn't binge. I didn't eat chocolate until I felt ill, and I'm not disappointed in myself. If I've ever had an NSV, it's this. Well done, Chantel. That's exactly what we were talking about. You have included chocolate into your life, which is amazing. And you've actually put it with some fruit and probably made a nice little snack or dessert there. I think that sounds really good. So well done, Chantel.
Yeah, that's awesome, Chantel. And I do want to touch on this kind of concept, which is being popularized by Sohee Lee, right? Sohee Lee on Instagram, much wiser person than I am. And she is pushing this kind of idea to add, not restrict, mm-hmm. okay? Where, you know, if you wanted to have the chocolate, instead of restricting the chocolate, you know, have the chocolate, but then add to it so that you turn it into a more well-round meal. So in this example, Chantel, you have chose to add, not restrict, where you've added fruit to the chocolate, you know, a bit of fiber, a bit of nutrients, you know, to make it more of a well-rounded meal. We would just want to find ways to maybe add some protein to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be difficult to add protein to chocolate and you know, some strawberries, but maybe if you had a burn bar, chop it up, mix it in, then you've got some protein, you've got some chocolate, you've got some fruit. So then now you've gone from, you know, just a food that might be low in nutrients. You know, let's all agree that, you know, chocolate might be low in nutrients. But then you're adding to that meal so you can enjoy the chocolate, but then also have a nourishing meal as well. So just like a lens flip on how we approach food to add and not restrict.
That's right. And also from what you just suggested, finding that balance within every meal. So that's another really good tactic. I remember when my friend many, many years ago introduced me to macros, and she was just learning as well, and she had PVC, protein. She had vegetables and, yeah, things like that, whatever it was, proteins, fats, carbs. And I started to learn, and I'm like, okay, so it's building blocks. So you want to do your building blocks. And I think once you learn about those building blocks, you can take them anywhere with you, to a restaurant. You can have them at home, to social gatherings, and you go, okay, I need each element of my building block every time, and that will be fine.
So good. Nick, I found a few NSVs this week, and the first one goes to Amanda Phillips. And I like this one. Starts off, hashtag NSV. performance goal number 3. And it kind of rhymes. NSV performance goal number 3.
She did a good job for you there.
I like it. And I love performance goals, you know, regardless of what it is, when we're focusing, you know, away from the scales and we're focusing on our performance, we often find some big improvements in our body composition and scale weight by just focusing on, you know, how well we can move.
Mm.
And Amanda writes, doing a body weight back squat was my third goal, my first goal, my final goal in the challenge, and I managed to just do 3 reps. I nearly didn't go for that third rep and said to myself mentally, come on, you can do it. Whatever result I can get from the challenge, I honestly say I am proud of myself for the strength I've gained. So Amanda was able to complete a back squat with her body weight, not once, not twice, but thrice, 3 times. Mm-hmm. She was able to do 3 reps with her body weight on her back. And I love that. I love that from Amanda. And you know what, Nick? Maybe we'll make that our little goal for the week. You know, post a video of your squats. All right?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I want to see maybe like body weight. I want to see how many reps you could do with your body weight on your back.
Yes, please.
Which might be a big ask for some individuals. Might be a small ask for other individuals. Because Nick, I think you warm up with your body weight on your back, don't you?
Yeah. Well, after the empty bar and another. But you mean after that?
After that, you're still warming up with your body weight on your back.
Yes. But remember, that's been a long time coming. But you know what? I can relate completely to this because Amanda, whenever I'm really wanting to visit the core of why I train and stuff like that, I always go back to my performance goals and I go back to how far I've come with everything. And that makes me feel good no matter what else is going on. So I know that that's like just something that you can really always come back to, and you can always improve on that as well. And it's quantifiable, it's measurable, and it's always awesome. So I love it.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And so you have to post your video as well.
Of my squats.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, there's probably enough videos of me squatting on Instagram.
There's never enough videos of you squatting. I just don't know why you would think that. That's heinous to think that.
But yeah, show us your squat. Let it be front squat, back squat, overhead squat. Maybe a pistol in there. That's been a good one.
Yeah, we'll absolutely. Any type of squat, let's do it. Let's finish strong. Let's have a bit of fun this week. And yeah, so if you're listening to this, let us know by posting your video.
Next one here goes to Michelle Cavana. And this is a longer journal post, so just cut it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But she writes, I'm back. Well, the muscles are. And the strength increased rapidly. My clothes are fitting again. And she writes that she refused to buy bigger clothes when she put on weight. And I recognize myself in the mirror. I'm back on the gym floor looking strong and feeling like I belong there. Mm-hmm. And I love this on lots of different levels. And, you know, if Michelle is feeling confident enough that, you know, she feels that she's able to be on the gym floor, which, you know, the gym floor is always welcoming to everybody from all walks of life and all, you know, fitness levels and, you know, training levels. And, you know, Michelle, she feels like she's part of the gym. Awesome. That's a huge step. And, you know, regardless of what may have happened to her to make her fall away from fitness and maybe lose some of these muscles that she's referring to, she's back. She's got the muscles back. She's got her strength back. And regardless of what the scales say, that's a win. So I love that for Michelle.
Yeah, I love it too. And I think that ultimately, it's always about how you feel. So if you're feeling like you belong there, even though you've probably always belonged there, you know, there's no reason why. Only my bunny probably doesn't belong on the gym floor, but everyone else could probably go there.
And maybe that little visitor that you had in that live workout, Nick.
Well, you know what? I let him stay because so he welcome. Was welcome. I had to move around. Yes.
Oh, gosh. Look. The last one here goes to Alex Chapman. And Alex writes, well, look, Alex is a little bit of a scale victory, but we're going to focus on the non-scale part.
Okay.
But Alex writes, feeling super chuffed with myself. Did some photos and compared my starting to my starting. Although it's not exactly the change I visualized at the beginning of the challenge, I'm still really proud of myself. 4 kilos down and starting to feel like my old self again. 9 days to go, hoping for another 1 kilo. Even though every day is challenging, when I see these changes, it makes it all worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And I think the process of this is really good because it's about actually, you know, visualizing change and then looking at it, looking at different measures and just going for it and being really happy with what's gone on. And that's the other thing that I want everybody to understand is at the end of this, be happy with what you've achieved. Be happy with yourself. There's no point in punishing yourself. So be happy.
Don't
celebrate
worry.
It.
Don't worry.
Here's a little song I wrote.
No, but I think Alex, you know, touches on some key concepts where, you know, she visualized, like you said, Nick, an outcome. But then she kind of mentions that she might not have been able to reach that visualization, which is okay. Because some of us may have, you know, spent the past 10 or 20 years slowly putting on weight, maybe realizing that we're a little bit out of shape, and we may have visualized something really extreme, like, oh, I want to look like this bodybuilder that I idolize, or maybe this person that I see on Instagram who posts photos of a flat stomach or, you know, lean legs, whatever it is. And maybe we misjudged how long it takes or how much effort it is to reach that position. And maybe 12 weeks is a very short time to kind of get there. And I think it does take a little bit of reflection to understand that, hey, I might not have been able to reach my visualized goal this time or yet. And that's okay, because often it is just a mixed match with our expectations on a time frame. So if you are sitting there thinking, oh, I really wanted to lose X amount of kilos, or I really wanted to have, you know, striated quadriceps or the six pack, or I wanted to fit into a size six dress or whatever your goal was, if you didn't reach that, that's okay, because the timeline keeps going. So you might not be able to reach it over these 12 weeks. You might be able to reach it over another 6 weeks or another 12 weeks or another 6 months of training. So focus on that longevity approach. Celebrate the wins that you've seen. And, you know, don't worry. Be happy, because there's always going to be another day.
Yes. That's awesome. Now I feel motivated. Okay, off I go.
Off I go.
Uh-oh. I have to finish the podcast.
Dump, 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 dump.
She's running down the stairs now. Let's go and find a gym. Let's go for it. Come on.
Nick. Let's move on to our Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
All right. So, I'm just going to quickly talk about life in between challenges and what it looks like for you, but not in terms of daily life. I just want you to, you know, sit down, as I say a lot, with a pen and paper and actually write down what your goals are for yourself moving forward. So, touching on what we just spoke about, have a visualization, even do a vision board. I know it sounds a bit strange, but I have one. I'll tell you about my vision board. My vision board consists of, because at the moment I'm doing the bodybuilding thing, so it consists of different body parts that I would ultimately like, you know, that I aspire to have, although I have all the body parts. I mean, like the way that I'd like them to look. It's not that I need to go and grab one from the shop. But, you know, so I've got a good quad picture, a calf picture, shoulders, things like that. So if you put them all together, it'd look like the weirdest person. But that's just my vision board that sort of keeps me in the game. Now, I think that that's really good. You can also have a vision board of somebody running or, you know, or some food that you like. You know, those sorts of things. It doesn't have to just be aesthetically, you know, aesthetic stuff. It can be stuff that means something to you. It could be books that you want to read, things that you want to do. So I'd be gathering all that information. I'd be listening to some podcasts. And then once you kind of figure out where you want to be, is it about losing body fat for you, or is it going to be about muscle gain, like going into that phase where you actually eat more calories and train super hard at the gym? Which one? So I'm going to break it down to you. So if you're trying muscle gain, why would you do that? So as we were talking about, say, with Carmen, even though she's on maintenance, but it's, you know, body recomposition. So that's more muscle, more shape, strength gains, and sort of a compelling reason to hit the gym. For me, when I'm dieting, I'm less motivated to hit the gym. Honestly, when I've got energy, I love it. I absolutely adore it. So, you know, you fall in love with the process of lifting a weight. It's empowering. So, and really ultimately, in my opinion, just my opinion, it's the only way to that strong and athletic physique that you might be after. You have to spend some time doing it. And while you're doing it, you get to be so badassy in the gym. And also, you never really, people think, oh, I'm eating all these calories, I'm getting huge. You're probably never as huge as you think you are. Nobody really even notices, you know, it's not that exciting. But why would you not do this? Okay, it takes a lot of time. It's not instant. It's not straightforward. And it requires commitment with food and tracking. So it requires repetitive habits with tracking and eating, and it can be really uncomfortable. So you have to be able to be committed to that. Sort of, it's like I always say, you know, if you want a bunny, come and talk to me about it, because there's a process, and people who have pets and things like that, or children, you know, it's sort of like, it's such a process that you need to think it through in a way. And you might not be ready for it, and that's also okay. I know we harp on about it a lot because we both love it, but if you're not ready for it, that's also okay. So if you're already carrying a lot of body fat, it's best to diet down first, and then you can be in that optimal position for muscle growth. So you also need to be really responsible with your sleep and sort of that recovery after. So you can't really, if you're addicted to the cardio, if you're addicted to the classes, if you're addicted to all of that, that's fine too, but it's just not going to put you in that ultimate place for muscle gain. So you need to decide, because if you're somebody who does all your body classes in the gym, and you have coffees with your friends and you do all of that after, you don't have to give that up. It might not be, muscle gain might not be for you, and that is also okay. We love it, but that doesn't mean you have to. So if you need to diet down, the pros of dieting down, it's pretty straightforward once you work out your calories and your movements and your steps and how to balance those with your training. So it sort of starts to happen quite. I know you might disagree with me, and you can write to me and tell me this, but it's quite effortless once you have that balance correct. It's not as unquantifiable as putting on that muscle. You know, you can sort of tell with the muscle in terms of your lifting, and if you've got that under control. But other than that, you might not know week to week. So if you've not done it before, you'll be able to reveal what's under the body fat and the true muscle that you're actually working with. So that's really nice to see. As I've told you before, first time I dieted down to that state where you can kind of see the veins in your abs, I was like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not as muscly as I thought I was. And then, the cons of dieting down, if your body may need lower calories, don't forget. So we've always talked about eat more and eat more, and you shouldn't be that low. If you've dieted for a long time, you might need really low calories. So if you've been chronically dieting, if you're somebody who's dieted forever, and it'll be uncomfortable. You might need lower calories than you think, and you'll be like, well, hang on a minute, that's not healthy. But yeah, it might not be healthy, because your body might be used to eating such low calories that you need to go even lower. So it'll be uncomfortable, and you may quote unquote get bored. So you might get bored with the same foods, the same sort of stuff. You might crave that variety. So there's some things to think of that I want you to go away and have a think of. Where do you sit on that spectrum? Where would you like to sit, and how can you get there?
I like that. And I think, you know, you touched on some key points there, Nick, where, you know, we always think of the outcome, but we often forget the kind of like the pros and cons, or potentially, you know, the sacrifices that we might need to make to reach that outcome. And, you know, if we do commit to the process, you know, there are certain, commitments that come along with that, you know, yes. Just like having bunnies, just like having kids, like, and if you want to have muscles, like, hey, you know, there are some, you need to understand what you've signed up for. If you want to be lean, you need to understand what you've signed up for. Yeah. And you sure can, you know, tread water in the middle there for a while. And, you know, that takes a commitment as well. And that has its own sacrifices. Because if you just tread water and, you know, you don't want to gain muscle, you don't want to lose body fat, you just want to stay where you are, well, that's cool. But you're just staying where you are. And that can be, you know, a boring place, because you kind of feel stagnant. You're like, oh, I'm not really progressing. I'm not getting stronger. I'm not getting leaner. I'm just there. So we do kind of need to decide, all right, well, what are we going to do? Do we want to commit to this journey of trying to build muscle, build our physique? Or do we want to try to go through this journey of trying to, you know, lose body fat? And where do we sit on the spectrum? And are we willing to commit to those processes?
100%. And look, you know, say the gym that we were filming at primarily last week, there are a few pros there that, you know, they're committing to the process in terms of that's kind of what they do in their spare time. They actually professionally bodybuild. You see that they're not always ripped, you know, that they walk around and they're training super hard and they are committed to the process. You know, they've always got their food there. They're not missing a meal. They're not missing anything. You know, that's their priority. So that's things that you really have to think about. But yeah, commit to one or the other, and there's no right or wrong.
No.
It's how you feel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
No, good.
Yeah.
Nick, I want to talk about Ready?
Yep.
Reward and punishment systems. Ooh. Big, exciting words. But look, I think it's wise for us to now to reflect on how we view our rewards and our punishments that we imply to ourselves and its effect on our long-term body composition or body transformation goals. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what am I talking about with rewards and punishments? It's, you know, a real deep-rooted like psychological kind of concept where, you know, we're using rewards as a positive reinforcement of a behavior. So just like how maybe if you have a pet, like a dog or a bunny, mm-hmm. they do something good, like, you know, they sit when you tell them to, you give them a reward, and that is often maybe like food or a pat or mm-hmm. something. So that's what we're using as a reward. And then as a punishment, or like a consequence, we're using that as a negative, you know, reinforcement. So implying that we don't want to do those behaviors. So let's say, again, using maybe a dog analogy, if a dog decides to go to the toilet inside the house, depending on how you may choose to punish or reward, you know, it's a controversy topic, but, you know, some people might turn around and, you know, hit the dog or put his nose in the pee, whatever it is, right? So we're using a punishment and a reward type of model, okay? And this might be worth now reflecting on your own internal reward and punishment models with your relation to fitness, health, and your body transformation, okay? So firstly, let's talk about rewards. And a common one, the most common one, is when individuals will choose to use foods as a reward. So you might be in a position now, we're getting to the end of the 12 weeks, and you're thinking, oh, yes, I want to celebrate these 12 weeks. I want to reward myself putting in these hard effort. I'm going to reward myself with a insert food that you enjoy. Let that be a really highly caloric meal, like, you know, maybe a big pizza or like a beer or a bottle of wine or, you know, some chocolate or something sweet. We are using food as a reward for this effort that you've put in. Okay. Now, those rewards can come in all shapes and form. Like, you know, some people use let's say cardio is a reward. Hey, I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to go clear my mind. Some people use, let's say, TV or entertainment as a reward. Oh, you know, I've done a hard workout. I'm going to go watch this movie tonight, or, you know, whatever it is. So think about how you use your reward system, and is that going to be negatively impacting your progression to your goal, right? Because if your goal is to lose body weight and then you're using food as a reward for your goal to lose body weight, you can see how that's counterproductive and it's going to slow down your progress. You know, there's no right and ways to use our reward models. Ultimately, the bigger sense is that we're trying to reward ourselves internally, right? It's like a reward to do something positive towards our outcome. So if you change your reward system that, hey, you're rewarding your efforts with good quality food. Hey, I've been really diligent with my training this week. My reward will be, you know, this nice nourishing meal. Maybe it's a, you know, a portioned steak with some, you know, salad on the side and maybe a bit of rice. And that's like a reward system that is positively reinforcing your efforts, okay? On the flip side, we want to be aware of our punishment models as well, because we all have our internal punishment systems. And the most common one around exercise and fitness is using exercise as punishment. So if you maybe relating to this, have had a chocolate over the weekend and you think, oh, geez, I had a whole Easter egg or a whole Easter bunny or whatever you've eaten, and you then go force yourself to go to the gym and sit on you know, the treadmill for an hour because you're like, that's my punishment because I've been a bad person, okay? Think of like the long-term effects that have on you, how you will then view exercise, because you will see exercise more of a chore, more of something negative rather than something that you want to enjoy, that you feel excited to go to the gym towards. So the main takeaway of Coach's Corner this week is, you know, firstly, that there's like no right or wrong here. How you choose to use your own internal reward and punishment systems is you. It's your prerogative. But think about and reflect on the long-term effects of your reward and punishment models, and if that is supportive of your body transformation and body composition goals, okay?
Mm.
And the big one probably is food. That's probably where most of us are going to struggle right now, because we're getting to the end of this 12-week journey. And if you have been following a more restrictive diet, you might be looking at that chocolate bar being, oh, geez, I really want to have that. Where we hope that in the challenge, you may have understood the concept of portion control. If you want to have a pizza or if you want to have a you know, go back to chocolate or a glass of wine or whatever it is, you can have those things as long as you portion it out correctly and fit it within your caloric model.
Yes, definitely. And it doesn't work like a bank. You know, exercise, people go, oh, I can burn off this. Your body isn't a bank. So don't waste your time thinking that way. I mean, doing spin, I saw it all the time. And people would actually look exactly the same week in, week out. So it doesn't work, you know, using exercise as punishment. And food as a reward, it's so complicated because it depends what happened to you when you were younger, you know, how food was used. And then also that concept of having to eat everything on your plate, that's something that I see a lot as well. So people really associate food with needing to eat it all and not really listening to their hunger signals. So, yeah, really good.
Nick, let's move on to some questions for the week. The first question came in and it is, can I do maintenance training and what would that look like? Nick, take us away.
This was such an interesting question because I had to think about it because I've never been asked that question in my life. Like, legit. Have you ever? Yeah. I've never been asked, how do I do maintenance training? Mm-hmm. Because it's always, I guess, been about progressing with training. Mm-hmm. You know, maintenance calories, staying the same with that is something that's fair enough. That makes sense. But with the training, the thing is, even to stay the same, you need to progress. It sounds funny to say that, but you do need to be applying some sort of stimulus that's extra to the body every single time you hit the gym, even to stay the same. Because otherwise your body gets so, it adapts, it gets used to it, and you can actually regress. So what would it look like? I think the idea of maintenance might be more like doing that deload that we offer, just in terms of taking the training back, having a little bit of a rest, doing that deload, and having a look at where you want to head to. You know, in terms of maintenance training, I guess you could do the same thing every day. But as I said, you still need to be able to progress. So what I would do is I would personally look at particular lifts, look at your technique. I wouldn't be looking to, obviously, if you want to stay the same, I don't think that I'd be looking to get stronger. But it's very foreign to me, this concept of maintenance training. So I would probably do the deload and then I'd reassess from there what I wanted to do. Yeah, I wouldn't go crazy trying to gain muscle, but I think that you lose it. If you don't use it, you lose it.
Interesting. I've got lots of thoughts.
Yeah, good.
Okay, so there is concepts of maintenance training. Mm-hmm. So an example would be, let's say you follow the Booty Builder program,
mm-hmm.
Or one of our specialty programs. You know, if you may be targeting a certain muscle group, you may choose to do maintenance training on other muscle groups. Okay. Mm-hmm. So maintenance training would be kind of defined as no progress or loss in your training performance,
mm-hmm.
mainly measured via volume. So if you were doing, let's use the quadriceps as an example, you were doing, let's say, 10 to 15 sets of quadricep training per week, you may find that that is a progressing stimulus so that you're able to gain more performance in your quadriceps and you can adapt to that. Whereas you may find if you scale that back down to, let's say, maybe half, so closer to 5 sets per week of quadricep training, that is enough to maintain a baseline of performance measured via volume. And that's, of course, tricky to measure because you need to find a technique that's repeatable, you need to find a load that's repeatable and a rep range that's repeatable, and then measure that baseline so that you're able to apply that stimulus over and over again at a similar, you know, rate of effort and such. So very tricky to measure, mm-hmm. and it's a bit more of an advanced concept.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It must be more advanced because, like, I'm thinking that that's for somebody whose body part is exactly where they want it to be, like say quads, but then perhaps your hammies and glutes are not up there, so you really want to focus on that for that particular block. But so, like, entire body, like, you'd have to be like hatched from like Adonis or something.
Yeah. It would be tricky if you want to think your whole body. Yeah. I would probably go down different pathways of, finding a baseline of performance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe instead of calling it a one rep max, call it a one rep minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So how much can you minimum hit in each session?
Mm-hmm.
And that might be across a benchmark of different exercises so that you can maintain a level of performance, because we know that our performance is very closely linked to our overall
mm-hmm.
muscle mass. And if you find that your performance is slowly decreasing, you may need to increase your total volume. Now, there is bringing some literature into it, some science. I first spoke about this when COVID hit and lockdowns hit and many of us didn't have access to gyms.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really cool literature that suggests that if we cut our volume down to a third of what we're totally doing, that can maintain our muscle mass for up to 12 weeks. Okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of maintenance training, it wouldn't look too different to like a deload program or like an ongoing deload mm-hmm. program where, you know, we cut our volume down to a third. Maybe a third is very extreme on that tail end of the literature. So maybe let's say a rough number is half. So if you look at, let's say, your volume calculator on your training program, you could see how much volume you're doing. If you cut that in half, that might be enough to maintain your muscle mass, of course, relative to how much energy we're consuming, because that plays a big part in it. So that would be how a maintenance program might look like. So I would agree in that, yeah, like a deload program is probably what a full body program would look like. And maintenance training can be utilized if we are focusing on different muscle groups. And again, that probably is close to half of what our normal training volume is now. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So can I just ask a couple of questions?
Hit me.
Why would you do it unless you had... So like in a COVID situation, mm-hmm. sure, but long term,
mm-hmm.
unless you were like, say for you, maybe your quads could be at maintenance.
Yeah.
But you like performing, so that's not really an issue for you.
Mm-hmm.
But why would somebody do it if everything's not optimal on them? Why wouldn't you just do a full body program or something? Or, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I guess a maintenance training program might be suitable for individuals who, you know, honestly, Nick, might not have the same passion as you and I to training. So they are comfortable with their physique at the moment, or comfortable with the amount of muscle mass, or comfortable with their performance at the moment, and they want to find a program that can just maintain that. And that could be someone, let's say, your general population person who they just want to play with their kids. Like they don't care for, you know, squats and deadlifts like we do. I don't know, people like that exist, right, Nick?
No, totally. It's good for me to remember this. I love this conversation.
I think that some individuals, you know, that might not be their bigger goal, and their goal is maybe more one of more, you know, just general physical preparedness training, like GPP, where they just want to be able to touch their toes and, you know, pick up their kids and be able to do housework all day. So a maintenance program might be closely linked to like a minimum effective dose. Like, what is the bare minimum they could possibly do just to maintain what they're doing? Of course, the question is like, okay, well, you know, do you just want to spin your legs for a while, which is fine, or do you want to focus on progression? And I think maintenance training might be more utilized in building up lagging body parts. So if you want to go through a shoulders focused mesocycle or training program, you might choose to do just maintenance training on your legs so that you don't lose your muscle mass in your legs. You're just, you know, maybe doing a set of squats per week just to maintain the tone in your legs, but then you're focusing more of your training towards upper body to build your shoulders. And I'm sure, Nick, you probably do that in your own training.
Oh yeah, 100% get that one.
Mm.
Love that. Get it. I just think there must be a point of diminishing returns with general maintenance training where you start to go a little bit backwards.
Yeah. I think after a period of time, you may start to fall backwards.
Yeah.
I think just because of those random variables that happen in life. If you were someone who was super optimal in every single aspect and you were able to nail this, I'm sure. I'm sure people are able to maintain a level of performance. And Nick, you probably see this in the gym in your time in gyms where people, you know, look the similar way for a long time. They're probably doing an indirect maintenance program because they're just maintaining what they have rather than, you know, pushing themselves further where they might need to add more volume or higher intensity, or there's a mix match in those things. So there might be an indirect way that people find maintenance, or a very structured way that people find maintenance. And, you know, that could have some longevity. Like most of us probably be able to find maintenance for, you know, 6 to 12 weeks, no dramas. Mm-hmm. But long-term maintenance often comes with a diminishment in returns because of the life variable that gets in the way. You know, our sleep might falter, our stress levels might falter, our, you know, dedication to nutrition might falter. And that's part of being human.
Sessions and things like that. And then because you're not doing anything else, you might sort of start to fall behind a little bit.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. But maintenance shouldn't be seen as like an easy approach, because like true maintenance would be that your, you know, intensity level is maintained, right? So, you know, if you are choosing to do, let's say, 5 sets of squats, they still need to be 5 hard sets of squats. It just means that you're, you know, not doing 15 sets of quadricep exercises because you're doing 5 hard sets of squats instead to maintain that.
That's right. No, yeah, I get that bit. No, that's good.
Yeah.
Like it. Yay.
Nick, next question here. Is carb cycling any benefit for tone and shape? Or maybe reword that question. Is there any benefit to carb cycling while following a weight loss program, which is tone and shape? If yes, what would be the percentage of carbs when having a higher carb day? Should I focus on timing off my carbs with my workouts instead? Okay. Let's break this down. What is carb cycling? Carb cycling is a strategy often utilized by advanced trainees or more athletic populations in an attempt to increase performance. What would happen is we would cycle our carbohydrates, which will be very closely linked to calorie cycling, so that we have higher carbohydrate or higher calorie days, which match our performance days or our training days. And then lower calorie or low carb days when it is our non-training days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this works well with individuals who are trying to maintain their body composition, but then they might have a hard training session. And I'll tell you now, those hard training sessions aren't what we would call a training session, as in maybe, you know, an hour of training. These are individuals who are athletes where they might train twice a day and then have, you know, other training sessions in the middle of the day. So they might have, you know, a strength training session in the morning. They may have a skills-based training session, like let's say like a basketballer, you know, shooting hoops, practicing drills, rah, 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 and they'll have some conditioning work in the evening. So they have, you know, a full day roster of training where these individuals might find it beneficial to have higher calories in that day or higher carbohydrates in the day to match their performance outcomes, okay? Carb cycling can be a more advanced concept because it does take more dedication, right? It's not something that's just simple as focusing on, let's say, the calories. We're focusing on more aspects of our dieting attempts, which is more suitable to the advanced athlete rather than someone who might be more novice or someone who's just trying to lose some body weight, where we start to balance of complexity. Do we need to make things more complex? Does it need to be more complicated? Or can we just focus on a simple approach such as straight line calories? Which is why in the challenge, we decided to keep it straight and simple, because simple works, simple is easy, simple is best. Where there's no reason why you can't go and make it more complicated, but then it comes to the balance of, you know, why do we need to make it more complicated? In terms of percentage of carbohydrate ratios, there's lots of strategies. There's some where we'll have high days of, you know, over 50%. Others would have high days of over 70%. So it really does depend on the individual and the strategy that you choose to employ. There's no real right or wrong here. This individual also adds on, should I concentrate on timing of carbs on a daily basis with my workouts? In which we would say yes. So you would benefit from focusing your carbohydrate intake pre and post workout to maximize glycogen stores and glycogen replenishment. And we're probably looking at about maybe 25% of your carbs either side of your workout. Which often, you know, for, again, simple sake, if you're having, let's say, 4 meals a day, maybe breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, we might call that snack a meal, you may find that you consume a meal before your training session and you consume a meal shortly after your training session, which might fall into a normal routine that you do already. And if you do choose to have 25% of your carbs across 4 meals, 25, 25, 25, you may find that you are timing your carbs already. Yeah, okay, you might be able to make it more optimal by having maybe easier to digest carbs or focusing again on consuming a meal before and consuming a meal after. So the answer that I'm giving you today is just more of a simplified approach to it rather than adding more complication to your dieting strategy.
Yeah, awesome. definitely, if you're doing tone and shape and you're just wanting to lose body weight, the best outcome would be is if you are eating carbs and you're doing, you know, all your macros are fairly balanced, because if you can lose weight doing that, that's the holy grail. Then there's no dramas. You don't have to reintroduce anything. You don't have to play around. So as you said, keep it simple.
Yeah. The old KISS method.
Yep.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
Or keep it super simple. I don't know.
It simple, stupid. That's it. Yeah. That's the one.
Nick, this is a fun question.
Mm.
I'm thinking about doing my Cert 3 and 4 in fitness. Do you have any advice on where to start?
All right. Game on. So, well done for thinking about that. I'm assuming that you would probably, you're ultimately wanting to become a trainer or, you know, a coach. So, in my opinion, with Cert 3, you want to knock it out. So you just want to get it done. But Cert 3 also comes with a bit of responsibility where you can start to do the group fitness classes. So to be honest, now that everything's back up, I know that there's a lot of stuff that you can do online and you can tick it all off. But the best bang for buck is to be able to do some of it where you can actually go in and interact with the class, because physical demonstrations and practical demonstrations where you actually have to pretend that you're training a client and do that gym time, I think that's really important. And I don't know how much has been taken away with a lot of online learning. And online learning is great for the basics, but there's nothing like even learning how to load and unload a barbell, you know, that kind of simple gym stuff, gym etiquette, how to work your way around a gym, how to feel comfortable in a gym, how to, you know, perhaps you could be mentored by somebody in the industry who's already doing it. So they're things to look out for. So I would be asking the institution, and they're after your business. So they will be letting you know, what kind of mentor things do you have in place? You know, what contacts do you have in the industry? What gyms do you work with? That kind of a thing, because I think that it's really, really important to get that started straight away, because you can be as book smart as you want, but the reality of working in a gym with people is that you have to have pretty good people skills and you have to learn pretty quickly if you're up for it, because there's a lot of early hours and a lot of times when you might not be feeling super great and you might not be able to prioritize yourself, and you need to think about all of that sort of stuff and how can you actually you know, get your head around it. And the best way is to try it, to see if you can shadow someone. And you do need to insert four, so you do. But I would suggest that you find an institution that's really big on that and that you have to pass certain benchmarks doing that. I'd also, after you've knocked out the Cert 4 or Cert 3 and 4, I'd also be straight away looking for other courses that you can do, because although, you know, that's our basic requirement in the gym, you will get asked about certain things that are beyond the scope of Cert 3 and 4. So there's lots of other courses that you can do along the way where you will at least be able to have some base knowledge of who to send people to and, you know, what other allied health professionals you can work with. You get to know people. So I think that there's just so much to it that it's really important to understand that it's not just a quick fix for a changing career. It's something that you have to really interact with on quite a deep level. Even being able to, once you've done your Cert 3, even being able to get out there and teach some of those group fitness classes, you'll really start to understand about the way that people work and the way that you have to kind of get people a little bit motivated. And even though you might be really awesome at doing, say, like a video on your Instagram going, get out of bed or something like that, when you're actually waiting at the gym for someone to get out of bed at like 5:30 and you're like, are they coming or not? And they message you and they go, I can't get out of bed. You have to sort of realize then that that's your time. So how would you structure that? How do you feel about that? How do you feel about it not being about you and not being about your training, but actually trying to encourage someone else? So where to start? Look online, look for a good deal, because you don't want to get shafted with your deal, because it's all the same. All the courses are actually the same. They've got to pass a certain standard within the industry. So they're actually all the same content, but I'd be looking at one with absolute hands-on experience, because you don't want to finish and then go, oh my gosh, I'm scared of people.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I think, first thing I would say, just to touch on this question here, firstly is people, people, people. Like, it's a people industry. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you might love squats and deadlifts like Nick and I, but if you don't like people or can't deal with people, then it's not for you. And I remember one of my first experiences as a PT on the gym floor, I had a fellow in a leg press bawling his eyes out because I pushed him like too hard on a leg press. And this guy was like a banker or something fancy. And, you know, he drove a Mercedes, like, you know, someone that you look at him like, oh, geez, that guy looks intimidating. And I broke him in a leg press. And I wasn't expecting that as like, you know, an 18-year-old Coach Steve. So that was a big stepping stone. It's the first thing, people. Next is that there's no dogma in fitness. Like, there's lots of ways to approach fitness goals. And if you learn one method through your favorite, Instagrammer or your favorite personality or whatever it is.
Or what worked for you.
Like, those strategies might not be helpful for the majority of people, and principle-based coaching might be more optimal, focusing on like the bigger picture rather than individual strategies. And if you do become a preacher, that can face problems in the long term. And finally, I will also mention that things like coaching, things like nutritionist, are not protected titles. You know, even personal trainer, not protected titles. Like, anyone can call themselves these things. And I will say that, you know, getting your Cert 3, 4 in fitness isn't the end.
No.
So just because you have Cert 3 or 4 in fitness, it doesn't, have a lot of weight to it. And often, like, let's say myself, I've been a PT or a coach or, in the fitness industry, whatever you want to call it, for a good 10 plus years. And I've gone all the way and did a master's degree in health science, learning more and more as I can about the human body, how everything interrelates. And the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know.
Yeah.
So if you have achieved a Cert 3 and 4 in fitness, awesome. Congratulations. That's an amazing achievement. But it doesn't stop there. And I will also say that there is a big ocean of things to learn and experience out there. And I hope that you find your way slowly through all that content.
That's right. And at first, you're probably going to, I sound annoying, but you're probably not going to make as much money as you'd like to think that you could. So I'd have it as a bit of a side hustle at first, and then, see how that goes for you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, tell you what, we should create like a mentorship.
Yeah.
The M Challenge mentorship. And anybody wants to be a PT or take their fitness training to the next level, we should touch on all those concepts.
M for mentor.
Mentor. The mentor challenge.
Well, it's an M challenge now, so it could be anything. There could be different branches to it. We can chat about that.
I was talking to someone the other day about the M Challenge. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be mobile. It's all about muscle. It's about gaining mass.
Look,
the M could be multifunctional.
Look out, mofos.
Yeah. It's a multifaceted M
multi-directional
challenge. Look, Nick, last question here. How bad would it be? Gosh, what a way to start a question. How bad would it be if
It'd be terrible.
It'll be terrible. That's it. It'll be bad. How bad would it be if I took some time off from training in between challenges? Would I lose all my progress? Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. I do think that's a similar question to the first one, Nick. Mm-hmm. Can I do a maintenance training program? Yeah, it's similar, Mm-hmm. Would it be bad if you took time off of training in between challenges? It's nothing bad. Some time off can be okay. If we did, 12 weeks of hard training and, there's about 4 weeks in between challenges, sure, you could take those 4 weeks off and maybe just enjoy some you time. Maybe training to you means, formally going to the gym. But if you took time off and you were still active, maybe you enjoyed hiking or playing with your kids or, getting back into touch footy or whatever you enjoy doing, it's not going to be a bad thing. It might be a somewhat of a good thing. You could allow your body to recover slightly, maybe mentally reset maybe come and join us in the next challenge. So 12 weeks on, 1 month off, that's kind of okay way to approach it. Nothing bad about that. The comma but here is, what does time off mean to you? Mm. If time off is literally, oh, I'm going to sit on the couch.
Go to the pub every day.
Yeah, okay. Then we're going to face some problems. Let's give an example of our good friend's quadriceps. There's some literature in like the physical rehab setting where if individuals are confined to a bed, we start losing muscle mass in our quadriceps within 3 days, right? So if your time off from training is that you wake up, go to work, maybe do, 3,000 to 5,000 steps a day, and, come home, sit on the couch and you're doing no physical activity of any form, you may find that, you might lose muscle mass quite quickly because it's expensive tissue to maintain, like we've suggested. It does take, it's a very small minimum to maintain our muscle mass. But if you're not reaching that minimum, yeah, you know, you can lose muscle mass. And then the second part of this question, would I lose all my progress? Well, in a training point of view, your muscle mass, you can lose your muscle mass and more importantly, your strength quite quickly if you just cease all forms of training. Mm. But the good news here is that, you know, once you've developed muscle, it can be easier to maintain muscle, much easier to maintain than to build muscle. So, you know, your time off could be, you know, going to the gym once or twice a week. Your time off could be, you know, just being physically active with your kids or maybe playing some recreational sport or, you know, just focusing on increasing your step count. So you can have time off from formally going to the gym, you know, the squats and deadlifts or 3 sets of 10, you know, you can do that and you can also not lose your progress by doing that. But if time off means absolutely nothing, then yeah, you would lose your progress quite quickly.
Yeah. So you don't have permission to go crazy because you want to keep something up. But yeah, I think you don't need to be in the gym every day, all day to see progress and stay on track.
That's right. That's right. Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 61. Wow. 61.
Yay.
Of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you like this episode, you can check out our other 60 episodes, and we'll catch you next week for episode number 62.
All right, see you then. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.